Please note that this podcast contains information regarding sensitive events, including domestic violence, assault, and abuse, as well as other triggering events, such as murder. This podcast is intended for mature audiences. When Alice jumped down the rabbit hole, she immediately regretted her decision. A rabbit hole is a metaphor for something that transports someone into a troubling, surreal state or situation. Welcome to Afterglow, the unveiling of the Idaho cult, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. This is Season 2, Episode 3, Tammy Daybell. This podcast will take you down the deepest of rabbit holes as it unfolds. Stories so compelling, so bizarre, and so heinous, it's impossible to look the other way. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were dedicated in the most horrible way to an ideology that should only be fiction. Instead, their ideology put them behind bars. Join us as we explore the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of season 2. This episode is called Tammy Daybell. Tammy Daybell was Chad Daybell's wife for approximately almost 30 years. They have 5 children who are all adults and grandchildren. Now, before we get into this whole story, I just wanted to make a couple comments. I really want to thank everyone that has donated to my PayPal. It's super helpful, and I really, really appreciate it. As you can tell, this podcast is not monetized, so I do appreciate the crowdfunding. It's more helpful than you could ever know. Thank you so much to everybody that's donated. Also, I know I did skip a week, and I apologize deeply for that. I had to have a cortisone shot in my left hand. My left hand was a little bit out of commission for typing and trying to edit. So I did take a little break, and I apologize for that. I hope that was not inconvenient for you. But I'm back. My hand's feeling a lot better. But enough of me. So let's get into the timeline of Tammy Daybell and what the heck was going on with these loony, crazy, and what the heck was going on. It's getting deeper, believe me. So when we left off last episode, season 2, episode 2 of Brandon Boudreau being shot at. But some similar stuff was getting ready to brew for Tammy Daybell. Tammy and Chad married on March 9th, 1990. On October 2nd, as we spoke about in the last episode, Brandon Boudreau had a near miss of his life. On October 4th, there was a text from Chad to Lori. The text reads, "Thank you for sending me that paragraph, beautiful Lily." He's talking to Lori. "I'm eager to see you soon, trying to hasten her departure. I love you endlessly." That same day, October 4th, 2019, Tammy Daybell visits her parents in Springfield, Utah, allegedly at Chad's urging. Chad Daybell claims divine urging from ancestors. Now, I can just picture, "Tammy, your ancestors need you to go visit your parents." Now, Tammy's father, his name is Ron Douglas. He said she was healthy and she was doing Zumba with her daughter. She was clogging and dancing in the living room during the visit. So there's a tweet from Adam Herberts that was read, "Tammy Daybell's father tells me he saw her on October 4th, 2019. She was healthy, taking a Zumba class and a clogging class, dancing in the living room." At that point, Chad again sends messages to Lori saying, "Hello, sweet angel. Big news about Tammy. Please let me know if you are awake and can talk. I love you." Heart emoji, kissy lips emoji. Can I say blah, blah? The short version is that she has been switched. Tammy is in limbo and a level 3 demonic entity named Viola is in her body. It happened about 10 p.m. and was done by Tammy's sister, who I always knew was a 3D, but it turns out she is multiple creation. Viola has been attached for about a year to my niece, who is the 12-year-old daughter. I have connected with Tammy in limbo, and she is very frustrated and upset. She wants Viola removed as soon as possible. Viola seems to be similar to Penelope. The personality differences from Tammy should be evident quickly. Please see a confirmation on this, but I have now checked 3 times since I got home and get more affirmative answers each time. Not fully sure of the timing for removal, but once her actions verify the difference, I don't want to wait. Okay, guys, this is seriously creepy. He is trying to convince Lori that Viola, this dark entity, has gotten into Tammy's body just like Ned, Nick, whatever Schneider got into Charles. And he's saying it's obvious with the change in personality that this is not really Tammy. And I've talked to Tammy and she's really frustrated because she wants to be let go out into the heavens or universe or whatever and get Viola out of her body. So he is literally saying he has permission from Tammy to kill her body so that dark spirit, zombie Viola, can be released. He's also blaming Tammy's sister because apparently he's trying to convince Lori that Tammy's sister's 12-year-old daughter had been inhabited by Viola. But Viola apparently at the sister's, whatever you have to do as a dark spirit, moved Viola. This is how I'm interpreting this. Move Viola out of the niece, Tammy and Chad's niece, Tammy's sister's daughter, moved Viola out of that body and into Tammy's body. Now, Chad's leaving a little disclaimer. Not fully sure of the timing for removal, but once her actions verify the difference, I don't want to wait. Going down the timeline, you know, all these people are busy doing their thing. This Alex, this Chad, this Lori, this Melanie. I mean, they're busy. They got plans. They're getting ready for this whole Armageddon or whatever. But on October 6th, so 2 days later, Alex Cox visits that storage unit. Also on October 6th, there's a picture of Alex Cox at Mesa Falls in Idaho. So he was with somebody that's taken this picture. October 7th, 2019, Lori searches online to find out how long it would take to drive to Independence, Missouri, and then started to look for flights. At 10:21 a.m., Alex Cox texts her to find out where she is, and she says JJ's school. I find it extremely odd that she's telling Alex she's at JJ's school, just based on what we know happened eventually in the future. And JJ had already been not seen for quite a while at this point. So why was she telling Alex that she was at JJ's school? Did they have Alex devices? Because remember this in the future when we get to this part about Alex, but why wouldn't Alex know where JJ was? It's very clear in the future that Alex was very well involved in the disappearance of JJ. She never formally withdrew JJ from Life Academy. Now, this message that Alex had sent her, it had been deleted according to the FOIA documents, but they retrieved it. I don't think Lori was wise enough to understand that deleted stuff could be retrieved. At 10:55 a.m., same day, October 7th, 2019, Lori performs an online search, but it is redacted, so we don't know. At 11:59 a.m., Lori sends a text to an unknown person that was deleted and recovered. At 12:03 p.m., Lori sends a text to an unknown person that was deleted and recovered. At 2:23, Lori sends a text to an unknown person that was deleted and recovered. October 8th, 2019, Lori Vallow meets up with her niece, Melanie. The day before, something extremely bizarre happens to Tammy Daybell. On the 8th, Lori Vallow flies from Idaho to Phoenix, Arizona, the Mesa Airport. At 8:55 a.m., Lori sends a text to an unknown person that was deleted and recovered. At 8:57 a.m., Lori texts Audrey, again, redacted. So this is why this court hearing, when it finally goes to trial, there's going to be so much that comes out that we don't even know yet that we can continue to follow. At 11:15, she texts Melanie, niece, again, that stuff is redacted. On October 9th, 2019, there's photos and videos of Melanie Niece's children recovered from Lori Vallow's iCloud reveal that Lori was with Melanie in Arizona at that time. So Lori was in Arizona on October 9th. Now, that same day, Tammy Daybell has a scare. She comes home and there's somebody in a ski mask pointing a gun at her. Here's Tammy's account that she posted on her Facebook. Okay, neighbors, something really weird just happened, and I want you to know so you can watch out. I had gotten home and parked in our front driveway. As I was getting stuff out of the back seat, a guy wearing a ski mask was suddenly standing by the back of my car with a paintball gun. He shot at me several times, although I don't think it was loaded. I yelled for Chad, and he ran off around the back of my house. I have no idea what his motive was, and he never spoke, even after I asked him several times what he thought he was doing. I was about to smack him with my freezer meats from enrichment tonight when I decided to yell for Chad instead. All right. Super creepy, right? Because we know Brandon. Now, Tammy has no idea about Brandon or any of these people. We know Brandon was just shot at. He said that gun had a silencer or something on it, and he thought it was a paintball gun. And Tammy is thinking this gun that's being pointed at her was a paintball gun. Fremont County Sheriff Lee Humphreys said that Tammy called his office and reported the incident. And at the time, they sort of came to the conclusion that it was just a prank. Some prankster. But what we know now, the guy is shooting at her and then runs into their own property around the back, like as if he already had a hiding spot back there, maybe? That's my speculation on that. Now, I'm just going to back up for a minute and introduce you to somebody by the name of Julie Rowe. Julie Rowe is a, how do I put this in my oh-so-nice way? Okay, my opinion of Julie Rowe is she's a snake oil salesman. She's an author. She believes she talks to angels. She does energy healing. And she has been excommunicated from the LDS Church.
Rowe believes in energy and talking with angels. She says both she and Chad Daybell had a vision where angels told them Tammy would die.
He would never hurt a child. He's raised five beautiful, amazing kids that I love like my own. And he would never hurt Tammy.
Julie Rowe first met Chad Daybell in 2014. She says God brought them together to publish her book about a near-death experience she had back in 2004.
I've been in their home in Springville, Utah several times and in their house in Idaho dozens of times. He always had his arm around her or was holding her hand, and often would have his hand on her leg.
There was a three-year period of time where Julie would visit Tammy and Chad in Rexburg once a month. Chad and Julie would often talk about a vision they both had years ago that Tammy was going to die. But then after her excommunication from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints earlier this year, and Julie says they distanced themselves from each other. 3 weeks before Tammy's death, Chad and Julie called each other.
And I did ask him, Chad, do you still see Tammy dying? And he said, yes, I do.
Tammy was in charge of the finances and covers for Chad's books. Julie says Chad wanted to get out of the business, but Tammy wanted to keep going.
He basically said to me, I'm ready to get out now, and Tammy doesn't want to yet. And he's like, once she passes, I'm done. I can't keep doing this.
Now, Julie hasn't heard from Chad or any of his children. She's not reached out to Chad himself, and his daughter has not responded to her texts. Julie says she relies on her visions for comfort.
I do know the kids are safe. I can see them. I can see their energy. I can see that they're in a bright house. I can see the living room where they are. I can see they're in a nice, comfortable bed at night. I can tell you this. He did not hurt those kids. Those kids are alive.
Rexburg police say they have looked at the phone locations for Tylee, Lori, and Chad, but will not confirm or deny if any locations have been pinged. Along with the FBI, Rexburg police have asked multiple other agencies throughout the U.S. to join in on the investigation. In studio, Aaron Cox, Fox 13 News, Utah.
October 9th. We know Lori is in Arizona with niece Melanie. Did she go there to collect her? October 9th is the last time Melanie, niece, saw her own children.
You know, there's a part in there speaking about, my kids. If I had a nightmare that something had happened to my kids, I haven't seen them since October 9th. And, you know, he was taking everything so literally. And when I first saw this document, it was shocking. Like, explain this. Like, I can't explain it. And so it's good to come forward and explain where that comes from in the context and to look at it in its entirety.
So there are some text messages from that day. There's a meetup of some sort, Lori and Melanie, niece, 1:30 p.m. on October 9th. There's an address sent to Zalema from Lori. Redacted in street house number, but it says East Desert Broom Place, Chandler. And then it says, this is the address for tonight. So excited to see you. And then at 8:04 p.m. that night, are you still able to come tonight? And then at 8:06, Zalema says, yes, just finished, on my way. And then Lori replies at 8:08, okay, perfect. Just text me when you're close and I'll come out since the kids are asleep. Melanie niece's kids is what she's referring to there. At 8:18, Zalema says, okay. And then at 8:27 p.m., she says, almost there. And then Lori says back to her at 8:28, we're outside just hanging out. See you in a few. On October 10th to October 12th, Lori Vallow and niece Melanie fly to Missouri and then return back to Phoenix. And Lori winds up deleting a text message that references the flights between Missouri and Arizona. Law enforcement was able to recover a text message where Lori wrote, American has a nonstop flight, Phoenix to Kansas City, Thursday at 1 p.m., then fly back on Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Blank said we could stay with her, but I told her we could get a hotel and she could stay with us. She will take us all to the amazing sights. So they're going to Missouri. So there's a text message back on the 4th that sort of explains what the purpose of this trip was. It said, I said it wrong. The LDS woman who is an expert in all the feast days of the Hebrews that the Lord sent me to find through a dream didn't tell me the bride had to be the first to be symbolically translated before the 144,000. She said that the marriage feast always represented to the Hebrews the first resurrection, and that the Lord had told her by the Spirit it would be at Adam Ondi Amen, the place where it all began. The bride had to be the first one resurrected in the first resurrection before the rest of her people, the 144,000, could, because she had to atone and cleanse for her ancestors' sins and their ancestors' sins as feminine sacrifice in order for the church of the firstborn to be born. The police, in their FOIA document notes, did say an interpretation of this message would suggest that this was where Lori had to go to become translated and fulfill the beliefs of the Church of the Firstborn. Lori would travel to Adam Odni Aham, and that was on October 11th, 2019. And there were some people who have come forward in the process over these last couple years that verified that Lori and Melanie were in Independence, Missouri during that time, visiting the place that they believe Jesus will return. Also on October 10th, there is a payment from Tylee Ryan's Venmo account to Colby. There's several of these. I've kind of not mentioned every single one of them, but there are several throughout this whole period of time since the kids haven't been seen. There's money being sent to Colby, either from Lori or from Tylee's accounts. On October 11th and October 12th, Lori uploaded numerous pictures of herself with friends at the Adam Ondi Almond site in Missouri. And in these photographs, there's no JJ and there's no Tylee present at all. Now, in one of my live streams, somebody posted a comment in the live stream and we all kind of caught it. And it was saying that my family member works at Cabela's in Idaho Falls. FBI came yesterday looking into a purchase on October 12th made by Chad. It ended up being a rope and a ski mask. Okay, tiny backtrack. This is what I'm finding from this. October 9th, 2019, a guy in a ski mask shoots a Tammy and misses. October 12th, 2019, Chad Daybell supposedly purchases a ski mask and rope at Cabela's. I'm thinking it was a return, not a purchase, and I'm thinking it's Alex using Chad's name or credit card. That's just what I'm getting after all this time looking at this case. I think that that rope and ski mask was actually what Alex was already wearing. I think he was returning it. That's my thought on this because the timing is off. October 12th, when the shooting had already happened, the attempted paintball gun Tammy incident. It was referencing this day that Chad showed up at Cabela's with purchasing a ski mask and rope. Now, I don't know if this has ever been verified or ever came out, but it was something that was said in my chat, which is very strange because when Tammy had the attempted shooting, Alex was wearing a ski mask, or the perpetrator, was wearing a ski mask. October 13th, 2019, Lori travels from Phoenix to Idaho under the name of Lori Ryan. October 14th, 2019 is the infamous message from Melanie to Brandon saying that she was moving with or without her four children to Boise, Idaho. And we covered that in the Brandon episode. And on October 14th, 2019, Alex Cox sends Lori two pictures of Mesa Falls from his Yahoo email account. And remember, Melanie's email, it said the kids could remain with you in Arizona. You would have to arrange for daycare, or I could have the kids for school holidays and summers, or I could take the kids to Idaho and enroll them in school there, and you could have the kids for school holidays and summers. Please let me know what you would like to do. So she's peacing out with or without the kids. Melanie is on that mission with Lori, and you can't tell me that Melanie was in the dark about all this stuff like she claims to be. There's so many interviews with Melanie, and it just makes me want to just go through the screen. I can't believe there's not. Just drives me crazy, the whole Melanie thing. I have to insert my opinion here once in a while, you guys. I'm so sorry. It's a podcast, not a news report, right? So my opinions actually will come into play here periodically. October 14th, 2019, Kay Woodcock sends a final email to Lori begging her to see JJ, and Lori did not answer.
And on October 14th, a final email is sent saying, "No need to cut him out of our lives. This situation can be managed civilly." Signed with, "Please tell him we love him."
She should have been worried more about being threatened by the police, because I know, in every email I sent, I think I got ugly one or two times in those emails. After a little while, I'm like, come on, this is enough. Stop. And we need to see JJ.
Lori's family also claims that they heard JJ on a phone call on October 1st and Tylee in late September, slightly off from the timeline that police have.
Law enforcement is who I believe. The FBI is who I believe. Rexburg Police Department is who I believe.
As far as what Summer and Janice said, totally, totally irrelevant. It brings absolutely nothing to this case.
Kay and Larry say they haven't heard from Lori's side of the family throughout the investigation and wonder, why now?
You want to do something? Call us. Let's sit down. Let's have a meeting. Let's figure out where those kids are.
Let's be adults.
Please.
The one question that Kay and Larry want answered is simple. Where are JJ and Tylee? They hope that Lori's family puts pressure on her so they can put an end to all of this. Kim Powell for Arizona's Family.
On October 14th, this kind of circles back a little bit to Brandon and Melanie. Brandon called law enforcement to, I'll quote this, Brandon Boudreaux called me to advise Melanie contacted him and said she would be moving to Boise. Here are some notes from the police detective's conversation with Brandon Boudreaux. October 14th, 2019, Brandon Boudreaux called me to advise Melanie contacted him and said she would be moving to Boise, Idaho next week, with or without their children. Brandon was taken aback by this because Melanie never talked about Boise before, and she would never want to separate from her children. Furthermore, Melanie still had a rental agreement through July 2020 at her Gilbert residence. Brandon said this was extremely unusual behavior for Melanie, especially after the recent shooting. Brandon had custody of his four children during our conversation, and he said he would be seeking legal assistance, reference, for the custodial arrangement considering Melanie's sudden desire to move. On this date, data was also received from Verizon for the information requested on the search warrants. On October 15th, the notes go on from the same police detective. Information gathered indicated blank previously attended blank in Gilbert. Contact was made with the school resource officer who confirmed blank was disenrolled in August of 2019. Other possible locations were searched for blank and the Jeep Wrangler, but were met with negative results. Brandon called me to advise that he retained legal counsel and he learned he was still legally married to Melanie. As a result, they had equal custody of their children and Melanie had the legal right to leave the state with them if she desired. Brandon told me he would not return the children to Melanie as originally scheduled for tomorrow, which would have been October 16th. And then October 16th, Brandon calls him and says, Brandon contacted me to advise that he learned Melanie was still in his financial accounts despite her agreement to remove herself in August of 2019. Brandon had messaged correspondence with Melanie on October 7th when she agreed to remove her name from his accounts. As of this date, Melanie was still on Brandon's accounts. As a result, Brandon transferred the funds to a different financial institution. Melanie contacted me for the first time since our initial interview. Melanie told me that she tried to take her children out of school early today and learned Brandon did not take them to school. I denied knowledge of Brandon's reasoning, explained the equal custody per their legal marriage. I asked Melanie if anything further developed since our initial interview. Melanie said no. I asked her about her desired move to Idaho. Melanie said it was unplanned location and she wanted a fresh start. Melanie reiterated her belief that Brandon was manipulating and threatening her in an attempt to disrupt her relationship with Lori. Melanie could not provide any details or evidence of Brandon's threats or manipulations. We concluded our call. On October 16th, a male person did go to Lori Vallow's storage unit and spends about 6 minutes there. From October 17th to October 24th, Lori Vallow and Melanie Neese travel to Hawaii. There's photographs of them in Hawaii on October 23rd, 2019. So there's a deleted text message to Audrey from Lori that says, not sure how long we will be here until our work is done. That was sent on October 18th, 2019 at 11:43. There's photographs of Lori in Hawaii and no JJ or Tylee present. October 19th is the most significant in this episode. October 19th, Tammy Daybell dies in her sleep air quotes from me. According to her husband, Chad Daybell, he claims she went to bed with a cough and just didn't wake up. Her death is believed to be natural and no autopsy was performed. An investigator told East Idaho News reporter Nate Eaton that Chad didn't seem all that curious about how she died. Says, on October 19th, 2019, family members found Tammy Daybell, 49, dead in her Fremont County home. At that time, Daybell's death was believed to be natural. Daybell was interned in Springfield, Utah. On October 22nd, 2019, subsequent investigation by the Fremont County Sheriff's Office determined that Daybell's death may be suspicious. This is later on, right? Here's a news clip of a sheriff detailing what happened when the deputies responded to Tammy Daybell's death.
Tammy Daybell, who died at her home in Salem October 19th.
Deputies responded. They took pictures. They looked it over, contacted our detectives. Detectives had a few questions. They satisfied those. Didn't see anything that alarmed them.
Was Chad Daybell acting interesting or suspicious or normal?
To my knowledge, he was responding like anybody would whose spouse had just passed away. That's why the deputies didn't anticipate or didn't suspect anything suspicious.
And that same day, Chad went on to the AVAL, remember, another voice of warning, the LDS prepper community online place where they were all talking about the end of days and prepping and all this stuff. And Chad was big on there and his books were being promoted as well as Julie Rowe and all that stuff as well. Chad posted on the AVAL forum after Tammy's death was reportedly on the site the entire day, liking and responding to people about her death. Somebody had posted on there making a comment about this. They said, I really would just like to point out that I was completely freaked out by not only Chad's actions after his wife's death, posting on AVAL hours after her death and liking and responding to people's responses the entire day and on about her death, but also all of you for even remotely thinking any part of that was normal. Seeing condolence messages to a clearly deranged man who wouldn't get off the forum the day his wife dies suddenly makes me sick. It made me wonder if any of you have any kind of discernment at all. I almost didn't want to come back here. I was thinking, am I going crazy here? What is happening? Am I off? So I went to his Facebook page to get a good look at him to do what I do with just a pic. And sure enough, I saw the devil in him. Knew there was foul play. I don't know what it meant or how he got there, but it was true nonetheless. I don't mean to get on my high horse and say I knew it, but that was pretty disturbing. And at the very least, this community will have to gain my trust. Discernment, no matter the form of righteousness, is very important. There's absolutely foul play, and Chad Daybell will be in prison. Sorry if that hurts your feelings. There's a big lesson here to be learned. I've had to learn it too. It's a tough pill to swallow. This was sent by somebody with the screen name there of CA Kauai. So there's text messages between Lori and Nicole that day. Nicole was one of the women in their circle who we have some good police interviews with that we will play eventually, more of that. October 19th, 2019, Tammy Daybell dies, right? There's deleted messages between Lori and Nicole. 9:18 a.m., the message from Nicole to Lori says, I'm not sure if you heard, but Chad's wife died last night. And then there's some emoji faces, like sad face. Lori responded at 9:33. Oh my gosh, I didn't hear that. I'm in Hawaii and it's 6 a.m. And then at 9:34, Lori said, do you know what happened? Nicole replied, yes, she awoke in the night coughing, threw up, collapsed, and passed away.
Nothing to see here, folks. Not suspicious at all. Mm-mm. That's the same day that it's basically confirmed with the Woodcocks, Kay Vallow Woodcock and Larry, that JJ is actually missing. And Kay Vallow actually did confirm this as well in a press conference later on January 7th, 2020.
Sorry, I can't see.
So when did you discover that no one had seen JJ since September 23rd?
September 23rd?
No. It was in October.
October?
Yeah. I'm the timeline person.
She is, and I apologize.
And what was that moment? I mean, did you get a call that nobody saw?
Well, it was just a
combination.
A progression towards it. Like, okay, well, where's JJ? We were able to keep up with him through our measures that we took, and we were able to keep up with him to an extent, at least knowing where they were living. And so when we lost track of that, and then when they came up here to Rexburg, and we were able to find out where they live, but that's when we really started getting concerned, because we had no resources here to check on things. And although we were in process of remedying that and getting more detailed information about them, then that's when just the FBI and the way it all came together. It wasn't a aha moment at all. It was just a progression.
In recent police reports, they said that witnesses had said that Lori had been seen telling people that her daughter had died before her father's death, and that Chad had been telling people that Lori had no young children.
Sends chills up our spines. That I can't explain that. I don't know that. I don't know where or how anybody in any would think to even say that, or I don't know. That brought it home for us. It's like, oh my God, this is something really bad. And so at that point, we've gone through a very hard time, but that's okay. It will be fine. We'll get through it, but just, you know, we just pray in the end we get JJ and we get to spend more time with him, and you know that he's okay. And that Kyle is okay.
In the course of all this happening, before that, did you ever hear Lori mention Chad, or anyone like Charles mention Chad?
Mm-hmm.
Was he ever in the picture before this? Yes. Before they got married?
Yes.
How did they talk about him? How did she know him?
Charles suspected they were having an affair, and he told me about it. And he showed me what he had that made him think that, and he was right. He was spot on.
What kind of evidence was there?
It was just some things that we discussed, and he showed me.
And she's been married how many times now?
Chad's number 5.
Did he have any worries about him other than the affair? Did he seem concerned about her safety with him?
No.
Did she?
Oh, wait, her safety with Chad?
Yes.
No, Charles was worried about his safety with Alex and Lori. He was concerned because Lori had voice that she, you know, that she would murder anyone that got in her way, or however it was. I can't quote me on that, but it went something to that effect.
I wanted to ask you about the other night. I didn't get a chance to ask you. You said there was 2 attempted murders that failed. And you just mentioned one was Brandon Berdeaux. Who is this person, and what?
Brandon?
Yeah.
Lori has a niece. Her name is Melanie. She and her husband Brandon have 4 children. They lived in Phoenix, Gilbert, I believe. And Melanie is involved in this cult as well. And so they were getting divorced. She wanted a divorce too. And she wanted out. And then Brandon did have a life insurance policy. And so one day he was coming home from the gym and somebody was there in a Jeep that he identified as someone in the family's Jeep, and that they shot at him and missed him by inches. But he had not turned into his driveway yet. So he accelerated and quickly got out of the area and notified law enforcement. So that you can form your own opinion on that.
And I know that right now police do not believe that the children are with Lori and Chad, but do you guys think that maybe the two children are together wherever they might be?
I pray they are.
Yeah, okay. That's our prayer. Okay. But do we know a fact? No, we absolutely do not know.
And there has been a time where she's kept them away before. Is that kind of normal after this change happened that you've tried to make contact and she hasn't allowed you to?
Okay. Has
there been a period of time where you haven't been able to see or talk to JJ before?
No, never. He's always been accessible to us, always.
What was Tylee's relationship with JJ and her parents?
Typical teenager.
Sister. She was a sister to JJ. I actually have a video, and I need to send that out because it's a cute video, and it's her playing with him, and I guess he was probably three. Maybe two. Anyway, it's really cute. And I didn't even realize I had it. I ran across it the other day. So I will post it or get it out there.
Back in September, when JJ was reported being taken out of school, Tylee wasn't in school. Do you have any idea where she was in September?
No, none.
Did she ever reach out to you guys?
No.
Did she have another set of grandparents that she ever contacted?
She does have Lori's parents.
My mother and dad.
And Joseph Ryan, his parents.
I don't know anything hardly about Joe's family, but Lori's parents are alive, and they are, I guess they're in Arizona.
Do you have any contact with them?
No.
Are they aware of what's going on?
Yes.
Okay, we'll just take a couple more questions to let you guys get going.
Do you think if JJ felt as if he were in trouble, would he be the type to run away?
Well, what kind of trouble? Stranger danger or?
I guess we can only speculate as to what Lori and Chad could have, maybe, if they are involved in their disappearance. You know, at this point, they're not really suspects. Yeah. But
JJ was always, everybody involved with JJ wanted to keep him safe. Mm-hmm. So we always told him, JJ stay with Papa. Mm-hmm. Kay would do the same thing. Her mom and dad did the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that you had to be visual with him at all times. Mm-hmm. And he would take off. He loved to run. Mm-hmm. In one of the homes they had a long time ago, it was by a golf course. He ran those greens up and down. He loved to run.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did know he's stop or go. Yeah. And go is 100 miles an hour. Yeah. It was one or the other.
I'm just wondering if maybe if something in that home just didn't seem right to him, or if he felt in danger, would he?
He wouldn't. I don't think he has the wherewithal to formulate that opinion. Sure. And then the other part is he didn't understand fear. And so that was a big part of his personal safety. Whenever you had him with you, you had to be extremely careful, and he would just jerk out of your hand and just take off. It didn't matter if it was a busy street or anything. He would just do it. And, you know, and he did it with me one time, and I thought, I mean, it scared me to death, but, you know, I mean, it was okay. There was nothing.
You had to be aware around him. But as he got older, I can say this, it wasn't as bad as when he was three or four. And as Kay said, you know, he's he's a couple of years behind in his age and his emotions. But that's the reason the last time we saw him that I was starting to see a side of him that we had never seen. He was being funny and he was being.
He was picking at me.
Yeah, he would pick at you. Yeah. And he never did that. Mm-hmm. And so it was a changing at all. I know they're wanting to wrap this up. What I would like to do, please, everybody, please, you know, get a copy of the poster and try to spread it as much as possible.
Could you tell us the number? And
the Rexburg PD phone number is 208-359-3000. And the NCMEC phone number is 1-800-842-5678. And the website is www.findjjandtylee.com.
If they saw this, what would you like to say to Tylee and JJ?
Come call us. We'll be there as quick as we can get there. We'll get authorities there to pick you up. Just someone out there, someone, you can't tell me someone doesn't know something about these children. Someone does, can give us one piece of information. That's all we want. And we want JJ back. We want Tylee back. And we want closure on this. And that's the reason I'll say it again. Thanks to all the authorities that are involved in this. The effort that is being put into it's honestly amazing. It's just, in my entire life, I have never been involved in something like this. And to see the effort that is put in this is unbelievable. So please, if you know something, as the saying goes, say something. And call us, call the authorities, call the church, call a fire station. Anybody.
Call the phone number on the flyer.
Just get them. I don't care. Look, call somebody. That's all we want. And
thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
The older daughter of Chad Daybell says to Julie Rowe, and we'll go into Julie Rowe at some point, but she's sort of irrelevant, but relevant, if that makes any sense, because she's in this belief system, but she's kind of on her own little Julie Rowe world. And she, Emma, apparently said to Julie Rowe that she was afraid of her father getting remarried. This is an interview with Julie Rowe talking about this on Fox 10 Phoenix.
When I knew him and was working with him, I did not view him as a cult leader because he never was like that when I was around him.
Author Julie Rowe reveals what she knows about her former publisher, Chad Daybell. They met through an End of Times forum online called Another Voice of Warning in 2014. Rowe would go on to write books about visions she says she had after her near-death experience. Chad claimed to have similar experiences and spoke about them at events.
He talked about his near-death experience and the visions he's had about mostly what's coming to Idaho and Utah.
That's where Lori Vallow enters the picture. Not only did she read Chad's books for years, they finally met. And by October 2018, Chad started emailing the married woman and mother of JJ Vallow and Tylee Ryan. The emails include documents attached. This one from January 2019 talks about the seven eras of influence. The last note says, gathering to southeast Idaho and Arizona, laying the foundation for Zion. Rowe believes Chad's ideas are off track.
So I don't know why he thinks Idaho or Arizona are any place special other than I have seen gathering places there. And I know when we talked about it, he did too. But he seems to have taken it several steps further.
By September 2019, Lori moved her kids JJ and Tylee to Rexburg, Idaho. By November, she was married to Chad in Kauai. A little more than 2 weeks after Chad's first wife, Tammy, died. On the day of her death, Julie says she spoke to Chad's daughter.
And she said, Julie, do you know what I'm most scared of? And I said, no, what? And she said, my dad getting remarried.
Her fear became reality. Rose says Chad also confided in her a year ago.
In February of 2019, he told me he was trying to keep his marriage together and finances were tight.
Authorities say Chad received $430,000 through Tammy's life insurance policy. Meanwhile, the deaths of Lori's former husband, her brother, and Tammy are under investigation.
On October 20th, 2019, Brandon Boudreau called Kay Woodcock to let her know that Tammy Daybell died. Kay remarked that they were killing everybody along the way. Kay did express a lot of suspicion that Tammy was poisoned because Lori apparently had spoke about poisoning people over the years. And here's where I find it really interesting, and malachite comes into my mind again.
What did you think when you heard that Tammy had died? And then Alex.
Well, I knew Tammy died right shortly thereafter because Brandon and I were talking, and Brandon, when he found out, he let me know, and he and I both knew that that was, oh my God, they're killing everybody along the way. And so, so with that, we knew it was too coincidental to be not being manipulated in any way, shape, or form. It was a manipulation to the nth degree. And the fact that, however, I don't know if with Tammy, I would say she got poisoned because that seems to be something they like to do. And Lori has spoken of it, poisoning.
When did you speak of it?
Oh, it's just been over the years.
As you know, there's a few spoilers in here talking about the fact that Alex died, too. We'll get to that. Everything happens in a big snowball. Also on October 20th, 2019, Lori Vallow books a flight from Phoenix to Idaho for travel on the 24th. And so it says, Phoenix to Idaho ticket booked on 10/20/2019, the day after Tammy died. Confirmation number was 9FBTBX for travel on October 24th. On October 22nd, 2019, Brandon and Melanie Boudreau's divorce is finalized. On October 22nd, 2019, Tammy is interred in Spring Creek, Idaho. So that was the day that they buried Tammy in her casket. Thankfully, she was not cremated. That's huge here. On October 22nd, 2019, a man accesses Lori's storage unit again and stays for 9 minutes. On October 23rd, 2019, there's a memorial service held for Tammy Daybell in Rexburg. Here's Tammy's obituary. Tamara Michelle Daybell of Salem, Idaho, 1970 to 2019. Tamara Tammy Douglas Daybell passed away peacefully in her sleep on Saturday, October 19th, 2019 in Salem, Idaho. She was born May 4th, 1970 in Pasadena, California, to Ronald and Phyllis Cooper Douglas. She enjoyed growing up in South Pasadena and Anaheim in Southern California with her Cooper cousins and living close to Disneyland. She and all her siblings were chartered members of the mentally gifted students at Cerritos Elementary School, enabling her to develop creative writing skills she used throughout the rest of her life. She loved putting on family shows that she produced and directed, corralling any family members she could. It was a happy childhood with many memories, including trips to the beach, camping at Elfin Forest, and Gallico Ghost Town. When Tammy was 13, she moved with her family to Springville, Utah. She was an excellent student, and she played the drums and clarinet in the Springville High School band. She was the yearbook editor her senior year. Most of all, she was known for a friendly smile and kindness to everyone. Tammy shared a love of books and reading with her family. She created her own library, lending books to her siblings with actual library cards and fines when they weren't returned on time. She loved classic musical movies and learned the songs and words. Then she and her siblings would reenact them. Hilarious. During the summer following her freshman year at Brigham Young University, she met Chad Daybell. They quickly fell in love and were married on March 9, 1990, in the Manti Temple, while Chad continued his schooling. Tammy supported the family by working as the secretary for Springville's Parks Department. As part of her job, she typed thousands of handwritten burial records into a computer database. This helped spark her interest in family history, which later would become her favorite hobby. Throughout her life, she submitted more than 100,000 names for temple ordinance work. She even managed to teach her computer-challenged mother to learn and join in the gathering of family history. A miracle. After Chad graduated and took a job in Ogden, Utah, Tammy became a full-time homemaker and mother as their family began to grow. She loved her children deeply and encouraged them in countless ways. She often took the children to public library and helped them develop a passion for reading. The family returned to Springville, where Tammy later became the computer teacher at Art City Elementary. Tammy was a computer genius who also had a talent for graphic arts. In 2004, she and Chad founded Spring Creek Book Company, and Tammy wore many hats as their company grew, juggling her roles as chief financial officer with designing book covers. She was the true backbone of the company, and she was proud of the dozens of books the company published over the years. In 2015, the family moved to Salem, Idaho, and she became the assistant librarian at Madison Middle School. She later became the librarian at Central Elementary School in Sugar City, Idaho. She was treasured and loved by the staff and students alike. She served in numerous capacities in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, including as Stake Girls Camp Director and as Young Women President. She also served in Relief Society and primary presidencies. She loved the women and girls she was privileged to serve with. Tammy's true focus throughout her life was her family, from serving a delicious dinner each Sunday to remembering every birthday and holiday with gifts. She also loved all sorts of animals, but she especially loved Indian runner ducks. She also raised pigeons, chickens, cats, and rabbits, knowing each one by name. She loved gardening, cooking, and playing games with the family. Her laugh will be remembered and cherished. Tammy is survived by her husband and five children, Garth Daybell, Emma Murray, married to Joseph, Seth Daybell, married to Michaela, Leah Murphy, married to Adam, and Mark Daybell, who is serving an LDS mission in Johannesburg, South Africa, at the time of her death. She was a doting grandma to Chase Murray and Jordan Murray, with a third grandson, Oliver Daybell, on the way. She is also survived by her parents, Ron and Phyllis Douglas, and four siblings, Michael Douglas, Samantha, William, Matthew Douglas, and Benjamin Douglas, and numerous nieces and nephews who loved her dearly. Funeral services will be held on October 22nd, 2019 at 11 a.m. in the Spring Creek 6th Ward Chapel, located at 860 East 200 North in Springville, Utah. A viewing will be held on Monday evening from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at that location. Interment will be in the Springville Evergreen Cemetery. A memorial service will also be held Wednesday, October 23rd at 1 p.m. in the Henry Fork Stake Center, 2001 North 3000 West in Rexburg, Idaho. And with that, I'm going to conclude this episode of Afterglow, Unveiling the Idaho Cult, Season 2, Episode 3, Tammy Daybell. We're just getting started, everyone. I know I've been saying this now for two seasons of this show, but it is absolutely horrendous. Like I said in the beginning, the lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I will be back next week with episode 4. Hang in there with me. It's getting deeper. And again, thank you to everyone who has donated. As you know, I am a one-woman show. I am the editor. I am the host. I am the researcher. I am it. I am the show. I am the one here doing all this, and I really appreciate it. I've been passionate about this case since I started my YouTube channel, and I really feel like the platform of the podcast is an excellent way for us to be able to share the story and realize what was going on with these people and how dangerous they truly were. And if there's anybody else still following their belief system, they really need to think twice. Think three times. Again, if you'd like to donate to my show, please look in the show notes below. There is a link to my PayPal account. I appreciate it for the expenses of the show and to keep it going. Again, thank you so much. I will be back, and I am your host, Kathy Brooks. Thank you for listening to Afterglow, Unveiling the Idaho Cult, Season 2, Episode 3, Tammy Daybell. Sources for this episode, Fox 13, Annie Lennox, Arizona Family, Fox 10 Phoenix, and 14 Day. Theme music by Dan Lebowitz.